Drivers, start your engines.
Recording live from the NASCAR Man Cave in the Motor City, this is the Lap Traffic Podcast with Tony and Brandon. All right, Lap Traffic Nation, welcome to another show, episode number 23, post All-Star Race Recap. As always, I'm Tony Smith, the crew chief, alongside the professor, Brandon Crowd. How you doing, B?
What up, sir?
How are you, buddy?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good, man. Good race weekend.
It was a lot of fun.
All-Star. I always like seeing, I mean, like this, especially like the paint schemes, the whole hype around everything.
Yeah.
It's different. It's cool.
It is. Something different for the sport. It's always good.
Yeah, it is. It is. I like it. Another good week, as always. With hits and downloads and all of that good stuff.
Amazing.
So that was another good week. But
yes.
We have some big news.
We do.
We've been plugging it for a couple weeks here.
Yes.
And on the other end of our line is Mike Herman Jr., who is the spotter for the number 17 Fastenal Ford Fusion of Ricky Stenhouse. Mike, you there?
I am here.
Hey.
How are you, sir?
Welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time out to come talk with us. We appreciate it. So, yeah, it's really cool. So the first question that comes into mind, how did you get into being a spotter for a NASCAR team? I mean, it's not like, you know, not like your normal job you just apply for, you know.
No, it's not. You know, I joke with people all the time. They say, how'd you get that job? I'm like, well, it's, you know, I applied for it, you know, which is just kidding. You know what I mean? It's a lifelong journey,
right,
you know,
right.
Basically, I come from a racing family. My dad, Mike Herman Sr., was a flat track motorcycle racer in the 60s. Grew up in Kannapolis. He goes on to he was friends with Ralph Earnhardt, and he goes on to work on Dale's Busch car for like 10 years because the family shop was, you know, a mile down the road.
Yeah, you said Kannapolis, I put that together. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. We had Brian Keselowski on a couple weeks ago, and we asked him to help enlighten the fans on the Keselowski background. And his grandpa was a motorcycle racer, too. So that's funny that you got a motorcycle racing in your family's background, too, there a little bit.
Yeah,
because going back to the 50s and 60s, you know what I mean? Motorcycle racing was way bigger than it is now, you know, we're searching car culture, but you know, motorcycles back in those days were, you know, kind of the thing of choice to race, and you know, so it's kind of a natural progression. So that's how I got started, and then obviously you know, grew up around our Earnhardt shop, you know, through my whole childhood, and started racing go-karts, and I did that for 10 years from the time I was, say, 8 to 18, I believe it was, and then started driving the local short tracks myself at, you know, Hickory and Concord, and went on and had a pretty good short track career for 18 years. I was a late model stock car guy around the Carolinas, and then moved into Hoover's Pro Cup Series and did that for 10 years. So, you know, I had a driving background, you know, banging around the short tracks, trying to make a name for myself. So it kind of just flowed into the time when it was time for a career change.
And I think that really is probably a big part of it. And I would, you know, being able to talk to a driver like a driver needs to be talked to, and when to talk to them, right? I mean, that's got to be a big thing.
Yeah, it is. You know, but you know, a disclaimer: not everybody on the roof are former drivers. I think it's probably around half and half. I mean, we've got guys up there that's had good Cup careers, and then we've got other guys up there that were short track racers. We got one fella that's a good friend of mine, Freddie Kraft. He was a figure eight racer on Long Island, New York. So there's a lot of driving backgrounds up there. And then there's other guys, you know, like Chris Lambert at spots for the 11 car was actually my spotter in short track racing. And we kind of worked the system together to get to where we're at. And so he's never driven anything, but we worked on it together for many, many years. So, you know, you got guys that like him, that's one of the best in the business, that's never driven. And then you got a lot of guys like Tim Fedewa and Tony Raines and Rick Corelli that were, you know, great drivers at the highest level.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense that you'd be, there's a mix there. But didn't Dale Jr., didn't his spotter he found on iRacing? Wasn't that story there?
Yep. TJ was an iRacer and still is. And I think that's how they, you know, got to know each other, where TJ was in New York, I think around the Buffalo area. And they got to be friends on there. And, And I think Dale Jr. Obviously seen the talent in him, you know, through iRacing, and then moved him south and helped him get to where he's at today. So there's numerous ways that you can to make it, but the biggest thing that it probably appears is it's a lifelong journey. You know, it's not something that you just decide that, you know, you want to be a spotter. It's, you know, cool job, and in a year from now you can get a job in Cup. You know, right. I mean, myself, you know, my first job in spotting was with Joe Gibbs Racing in 2007, and I was still running Hooters Pro Cup Series full time. And a couple guys that had worked for me on my short track stuff had went on and got jobs at JGR, and they needed a spotter for one of their K&N East programs. And, you know, fortunately, the schedules lined up to where pretty much all the K&N races were off of my Pro Cup schedule. And, you know, he took in there and gave them my resume, and, you know, they hired me on the spot. So I did that for a couple years, and all the way to 2013. In 2012, I was actually back with working for Kenzie Rustin full time, and we were running a CRA Super Late Model Tour. I really honestly didn't think there was any way, a path to getting a solid job in Cup. And then all of a sudden, I'll never forget it, I was on the way to Daytona driving for an ARCA test in February, and my phone rang and asking me if I would be interested in spotting for Martin Truex Jr. on the 56 Napa car. So, you know, I went from not thinking that I would ever, you know, be able to get a Cup job, because there's just not much movement up there. Sure. You know what I mean? A lot of guys have been up there for a long time, and there's just not that many openings. And then, you know, all of a sudden, out of the blues, your prayers are answered, and there you go. And so that's pretty much led to where I'm at today.
That's really cool, man. You know, so we just finished up this weekend, the All-Star Race, Charlotte, and we're going to be back at Charlotte. What's it like from a team perspective in terms of being at the same track, home track, basically, for you guys 2 weeks in a row? You know, you guys didn't get the finish you were probably necessarily hoping for coming off a win a couple weeks ago at Talladega. But what can you guys take from that into the 600 this weekend?
Well, you can learn a lot, you know, getting the track time, whether it would be in the All-Star race like we were fortunate to be part of this year, or, you know, even the guys that, you know, run the open like we've had in years past. You know, obviously being at home is nice, because we only got two off weekends this year, and we've already eaten one of them up around Easter. So it's almost like a time that you can catch your breath, catch up on family time. It's nice sleeping in your own bed and maybe not having to be to the track so early. You know what I mean? Because I only live 20 minutes away from Charlotte. So I can be there quickly, and so that's nice. But then Charlotte's a challenge, because we don't pretty much the way our practices lay out is doesn't give us track time when we're actually going to be racing. And Charlotte's real finicky when it comes to weather and temperature. So we just try to build a notebook over the 2 weeks to try to help us to learn what we're going to need to start the 600 with, and what we're going to need to finish it when the sun goes down. And hopefully we figured out, you know, what we needed in the All-Star race the other night, 'cause that's pretty much your practice for the 600.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I mean, a lot of talk on Twitter and in the news, you know, last couple of days about the All-Star race. What are your thoughts on the All-Star race? What are they doing right? What would you do? If they handed it over to you?
Well, you know, one thing for sure, the Open the last 2 years has been spectacular.
The Open was good.
If the Open, it was great. You know what I mean? So if we hit that type of racing at night, then I think it would the storyline would be differently. And I think you got a couple of things in play there. Obviously, the Open's running in the day, and when it's still hot, slick, widens out. You know, there's a couple of different grooves, even though the top never really come in, but. And the other thing that you can't lose sight of the fact is the, you know, you had some young guys battling it out hard, like Suarez and, you know, some of the other young guys in the All-Star race. Those guys just don't make mistakes. I mean, the drivers at a 48 and 18 and those guys, they just don't make mistakes. So, you know, maybe in the Open, a guy might make a little mistake, you know, with a little pressure behind him or something, and have a guy close or something. So it makes a little bit different dynamic. But I think the majority of it's probably the fact that it's running the day. In the night, in the All-Star race, I don't think that they should lose sight of the fact that the fastest guy all night long didn't have that great of a pit stop. He starts fifth, and then he makes a daring last lap slide job pass of the 48 into three on the last lap, so for second. And if that would have been for the win, then I think it would have been a different storyline as well, you know. And the two obviously staying out on old tires, which is kind of put into a box to do that. Kind of forced. Yeah,
I don't think he had much of a he didn't have much of a choice in that.
He didn't have much of a choice, and he had to do what he had to do to for his own self. But it kind of split up. If the 48 and the 18 are side by side going into turn one, I think again you have a different race. But with the fact that the two was there on old tires, it kind of split them up. The 18 ended up having the best run and got the lead, and he got away. But you know, I love Charlotte Motor Speedway. It's my home track. You know, I think it's, you know, it's been a great venue for the All-Star race and that kind of thing. But the one thing that you hear the most is people want the All-Star race to maybe move around to some places. The other thing that you hear is people want more short tracks. And my thought process on it is the owner of Charlotte Motor Speedway owns a historic racetrack just an hour up the road. I think it's like 82 miles. And, they wouldn't be losing a date themselves because they already own it.
What track is that?
They need to rebuild North Wilkesboro Speedway, and it would be a celebration of our heritage.
All God's people said amen.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, because a lot of the things, there's so much business dynamic that goes into things that when people are screaming to move it here or move it there, well, the owners of Charlotte Motor Speedway are not just going to give up a date that they own now for the betterment of the sport. So to me, if they rebuilt North Wilkesboro, it'd be killing two birds with one stone. You know, yeah. We get another short track, they don't lose a date, and we're still close to home. You know, I can be home from North Wilkesboro just about as quick as I can from Charlotte. It's a quick drive, and the guys that live up on the lake around Mooresville, it's even quicker for them. So that's what I think we need to rebuild North Wilkesboro and take the All-Star race there and kind of celebrate our history.
Hey, Mike, we didn't have this on our sheet, but it's something that just came to mind when you mentioned the two and the All-Star race. And that's at one point in time, the Keselowski was looking to do something kind of different on their pit stop with the option tire, and I'm not sure if it was leaving them on or they were going to put the scuffed option tires back on. You know, NASCAR caught some flack with that. There's been some issues with inspection process. Can you walk us through that a little bit from an inside the team perspective on NASCAR, the inspection process, things that you guys might not be clear on even during the race, for example?
Well, you know, the inspection process, you know, disclaimer, I'm not involved in any of that. You know what I mean? So I don't really know the ins and outs. I do know that the tolerances that they are under, you know, compared to my short track cars that I used to work on, I mean, an eighth of an inch was a big swing. So now they're talking thousandths of an inch that you're off. So, you know, when you hear a guy fell an LIS, you know, we're talking about thousandths of an inch here. You know what I mean? You're talking about a strand of your hair.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I mean?
Yeah,
in some cases.
Bill. Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to, these guys have to push these tolerances to be competitive, to make the cars, you know, go fast and that kind of thing. So I think that NASCAR is trying to do what they can to police it, and the teams are doing what they can to try to beat it. And it's just a product of the tolerances being so tight. And, until we can get away from that and open things up a little bit, it's going to be a challenge. And it's just another part of the game. And when guys fail it before qualifying and they don't make it out there, the fans just need to know that it's part of the game. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, we're playing cops and robbers here is what we're doing, you know, and you just have to kind of roll with it. And, you know, as far as the tire deal in the All-Star race, it was kind of, you know, you can only write the rules so many different ways, and there was different ways of interpreting the rules. You know, it's just like the 14 kept their softs on the left and put sticker hards on the right. And the way I read the rule, I didn't feel like you could do that. And then they end up saying that, well, you could. So
what defines what defines a set of tires?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, is it two? Is it four? Is it? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, you know, you're going to have that kind of stuff in the All-Star race because guys know they have a little bit of leeway. It's just like if the 22 would have timed leaving pit road maybe another 2 seconds sooner, 22 probably would have been leading the race into one because he had a full head of steam coming to the green, and that was obviously by design. They sit on pit road and hooked the cool down unit up to it and taped it off, and they waited until they felt like they could leave pit road and go hard,
and they just missed it.
So a lot of gamesmanship going into the All-Star race because we want it to be entertaining for the fans as well.
Yeah. So we're really excited about having you on because we always talk about what a crucial role the team is, right? We, crew chiefs and tire changers and everybody else. So can you walk us through, what's a normal day for you as a life of a spotter for Ricky Stenhouse?
Well, with me, most of the spotters, so I guess the number one thing would be is I work across all series. I spot for the 16 of Ryan Reed on Saturdays. I spot for the O2 truck, whether it's Tyler Young or Austin Hill in the O2 truck in the truck series. So I do that. I'm always spotting ARCA, K&N, and a lot of short track stuff as well along the way. Been working with Ty Majeski for years, and I'll go to the Snowball Derby with him at the end of the year in December. So, when it comes to that, you're really busy at the racetrack because pretty much if there's something on the track, I'll be spotting and working with that team. So it's, challenging, from switching from one frequency to the next and knowing the tendencies of the cars and the drivers and what the crew chief's looking for and that kind of thing. So, that's a challenge as we go along on the weekend. But as far as preparing for the week, I watch a lot of film. I'll go through and try to watch, like for this week, I'll try to go back and watch a good bit of the World 600 from last year and kind of see the tendencies of it. But you can throw some of that stuff out the window because they put VHT down on the top roof.
I was going to ask you about that. That's going to change some of the lines there. There's some of the groove.
Yeah, obviously I've got a guy that likes to run the top. He's a sprint car driver, so he likes to run the top. So, but I think that once you put the VHT down, it kind of will put everybody up there as well. So really not much film you can watch on that, but on a normal basis, that's, how I prepare and go back and look at stats and different restart information and things like that to try to find out, which is the preferred line for restarts and just different things. So you just try to, no different than, football team going back and getting a game plan together. We do the same thing.
So are you at the shop with the guys Tuesday morning? Are you there at the, during the week or? How does that work?
Unfortunately, I'm only there as needed. Technically I'm a contractor, so I'm not a full-time employee. So I don't have to be there, first thing, on a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning. I'm there as needed. If there's a meeting they need me to sit in on, then I'm always available. We've got a pretty good system going between, my driver and crew chief. We text and call each other a lot. You know what I mean? So, we're always talking. We're always in constant communication. So, I don't have to be there in person, to still be engaged and which is good because, I admire all the guys that, work in the shop full time and go on the road because, that's a tough job. But, by Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday is my Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's my weekend, even though you're still kind of in tune with what's going on at work, you're allowed to have a weekend, which is nice. It gets you ready to get back on the airplane on Thursday and go at it again.
Yeah, that's not a bad schedule. That's pretty good. So I had another question though. Since you're at the top of these racetracks, what do you bring with you? You got to bring everything with you. I would think you'd have to bring a jacket and food and water and all kinds of things up there, right? You're up there for a long time.
Yeah, it's like going camping. You're up there. You have to be self-sustained. Pretty much got a rolling pit wagon that goes with me and has all my radios in it. And I think I carry probably 12 fresh batteries for the weekend. And, all my radios and headsets, because I always carry a spare headset. And, and your fan vision from Racing Electronics and your stopwatches. And then obviously you got to take your food and drink with you if you can, because that's back to spotting across all series is, a lot of times, we'll be on the track at 8:30 in the morning and I might not get done until after the truck race on a Friday night, you know, so, you know, we have some very long days, and you definitely end up totaling up way more than a 40-hour work week once it's all set.
Yeah, no, that, but that, I mean, I'm,
yeah, no,
I'm
totally.
I was all kind of kidding, but no, it's not. I mean, he's you got to have,
every, yeah,
you got to have sunblock and water and food and, you know, yeah. And, you know, whatever. He's got a long day up, and I got to believe it's a little windier up there, too.
Well, it can be, and, you know, you battle the conditions because, you know, you are, you know, most of the time 5 to 10 stories higher in the air, because a lot of times I'll have a hoodie or a sweatshirt on or a jacket and go down in a garage and it'd be 92 degrees down there. And the guys will say, what you got that on for? Well, it's 78 up top.
Yeah, right, yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, that it can, weather conditions can change on you on a dime, and so yeah, you have to be self contained. You have to have everything with you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I had another question. So I'm a road course guy. My background goes back to the Trans Am stuff. I've spent a lot of time at Watkins Glen. How do you handle spotter's duties at a track like that where you lose sight of your driver?
Well, there's a couple of racetracks that we use more than one spotter, and Watkins Glen being one of them, and Sonoma and Indy being the other two. We use more at Watkins Glen than we do anywhere else. I'll use two other guys at Watkins Glen. I'll have one in the S's and one again in the bus stop. And
that was exactly that's exactly what I was going to ask you.
It is. Well, you know, Watkins Glen, at Sonoma, I can pretty much see the whole racetrack. You only lose them, you know, into turn 11. You basically ride at the drag strip tower. You know what I mean? And once they're clear of that area there, I'll pick him back up into turn 11. And then when he comes off the corner, I'll lose him again, you know, on the other side of the front stretch grandstand. So I've got 95% of the racetrack at Sonoma. Watkins Glen is completely different. Once he goes up through the S's, you know, I'm watching on my fan vision or watching a lap time or watching the big screen. You know what I mean? To try to
tell what's going on. I absolutely do. Yeah, they're going to come down. You're going to get them down the front straightaway, downhill, make a right, make another right, and they're gone.
They're gone. I can see, you know, through the trees in my binoculars. I can watch what's going on in the bus stop. You know, obviously I'm not spotting, but that's my way of knowing where we're at, what's going on, who I'm racing and that kind of thing. Because once they come up out of the outer loop and head back towards you into, I guess that would be, we call it turn 6, which is turn 10 of the road course. I'll pick him back up into that corner, and then I'll spot him through 7, which is 11 of the road course. And then all the way back down through the front straightaway. And, you know, I try to use the best case scenario for me is when I use the same guys all weekend long, from, say, the K&N race on Friday afternoon until the Xfinity race on Saturday. You know, if I've got a team of guys that I work with a lot, and my non-companion spotter that goes to the non-companion races with the 16 Xfinity, he's my main guy that I use. And, you know, It's good when you have somebody that you work with all the time, and he used to be a full-time Cup guy himself, so he's got a ton of experience. He'll be spotting Indy 500 this weekend for Scott Dixon, so I got a great guy that's my second spotter, and we don't have to discuss where I'm going to hand him off or how I'm going to hand him off or where I'm going to pick him back up.
Yeah, you already have it worked out. Yeah.
Yep.
Wow, Scott Dixon. Speaking of, he aside from winning the pole at Indy 500, I heard he had a little excitement the other night too. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I did. I guess St. Elmo's was closed. If the front row pole sitter guys at the at Taco Bell, and obviously St. Elmo must have been closed. Yeah. Personally, myself, I would have been at St. Elmo having a steak, not a Taco Bell.
You're not
you know,
lying.
Glad
man.
That turned out.
Absolutely.
What it was.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, take us to the opposite side of things, from a road course to a place like Talladega, Daytona. You know, I imagine you can't take your eyes off your driver at all. You know, it's 500 miles of plate racing. You're trying to communicate with other teams. How do you multitask up there when you're trying to get someone to work with you to push, or maybe you're going to do the pushing and keep your driver informed? Walk us through a plate race, if you don't mind.
Well, plate racing obviously is a challenge. You know, you cannot take your eye off your car for not even a split second. You know, like, for example, in the ARCA race on the day before, I was spotting for Noah Gragson, and when they're coming straight at you off of turn four, so you have no depth. It seemed like, you know, there were five or six different, you know, white cars up front in ARCA. So you're having to really focus in on to keep your eye on your guy. And just the time that it takes me when I'm in binoculars off of turn four, the time that I put him down to pick him back up, we were like wrecking. You know what I mean? So, you know, just that split instance of time, you know what I mean? Something can happen. So you have to be zoned in on it, focused, you know, the whole entire time. And, you know, to do it for a 500-mile race is obviously is a challenge. I get a lot of information fed through me on Channel 2 from Brian Patty, the crew chief. So he kind of keeps me abreast of what's going on, what lap we're on, how many laps to go, what our pit strategy is. You know, so that way I don't have to focus on that type of stuff. He just kind of feeds it to me in my ear and that kind of thing. But you have to obviously stay focused the whole time, because nowadays we're you know, focused on trying to work the lines, block the runs, you know, that kind of thing. So you're doing way more than just trying to keep your guys safe, which is your number one goal, but you're trying to help keep all these guys at bay as well. So it's obviously you know, a tough situation.
So you know, I remember back a couple years ago when we were doing the tandem racing, you know, the drivers were able to have different channels in the race car that they could communicate actually with other teams. That obviously isn't the case anymore. Are you as a spotter able to talk to other teams up there on the box? And how does that work out when you're trying to work with other teams?
We try, you know, and actually Talladega is tough because of the product of our environment. Where I stand at Talladega, it's a weird spotter stand. We're basically in the top of the grandstands, you know, down the front straightaway just before start-finish line. There's two different stands. I actually stand in front of a stand, so I'm boxed in. I got guys to my left and my right, and I got railing behind me, so I cannot even move. So they have to be within shouting distance, and sometimes that doesn't even work. Just like at the beginning of the race, we had trash on a grill. I am screaming at the top of my lungs trying to get the attention of the two spotter to try to let him know what the situation was. And so it's a challenge, and we really wasn't able to get that information through because I'm boxed in. So we try to use other means necessary. The teams can communicate with each other, especially ones that are on the same manufacturer. You know, so you try to flow the information that way, which sometimes is not as quick as you would like for it to be either. You know, so yeah, we try to communicate, but it's tough. Daytona is a different story. Daytona's big. Probably the best spotter stand we have. I can actually flow from one end to the other fairly quickly, you know, but the biggest thing you rely on is the fact that, you know, in a cup race, you got the 40 best guys in the business up there doing it. They're so aware of the situation and what's going on that it's, you're just kind of relying on them to kind of know what you need, you know, and vice versa. So we all have each other's backs up there. We're all trying to have the best finish we possibly can. So you rely more on that than probably actually communicating. You just know guys, they know what's going on.
Yeah, so I had a actually a two-part question on there. One comes from my 16-year-old son, and his question was, do you have like code words, team nomenclature that you guys, when you guys talk, mean something that only you guys understand? Is that like a thing that you guys do out there?
Well, I think that some of the guys do, probably. We don't, per se. You know, we don't really have any code words or anything like that. We, you just know there's certain things that you, you know, don't talk about over the radio.
Sure.
and that kind of thing. And I might, you know, I don't want to tip my hand on how I handle those type of things. But
we don't want you to.
No.
Yeah, you have different ways of, you know, going about, you know, relaying your strategy of what you're wanting to do in the race, whether it's how we're going to handle a restart and that kind of thing. So I feel like our system works out pretty good, and it's kind of not something that's really we don't really discuss it or plan it. But, you know, when you work with a guy like I had with Ricky for this is my fourth year with him now, we you know, you're on the same page, and you're always evolving. You're always learning how you you know, want to do things and try to do it better. So maybe not code words per se with us, but, you know, we have different ways of going about it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then the second part of that question is, without naming any names or whatever, are there guys up there that you have no problem asking them to work with you? And are there other people that, like, I'm not even going to bother asking them?
You pretty much know, because when the green flag drops, we're all competitors. You have different levels of things. You have your teammate, number one, and
then your manufacturer guys.
Then you have your manufacturer guys, and then pretty much everybody else from there are the enemy. And so you just kind of know the situations, because what you do is just put yourself into their shoes. You know, if the role was reversed, how would you handle it? So, you know, there's guys that you can go to and that kind of thing to ask for help. But that's back to, the guys that are on the roof in the Cup Series. They're so aware of what's going on that if you're moving up to lap a guy, you know, and that kind of thing, you don't have to go down there and tell him, hey, man, give me some help here. He knows you need help. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You just kind of let it flow that way.
Yeah.
Hey, just a couple more for you, if you don't mind. So just you've been with Ricky 4 years. You know, how did you go about developing the relationship with him to know when he wants you to be giving him information in the car, to when he needs just to be able to focus, peace and quiet, whether, you know, plate racing, road racing, short track racing? What's it like, and how do you go developing that relationship to know what each of you need to be able to give each other to get the best performance out there?
Well, I think right off the bat, when I first started working with him in 2014, obviously, like I said earlier, I was with Truex in 13 on the 56 car. And then, obviously, for a lot of reasons, that team disbanded. And, at the time, Ricky was in the market for a new spotter. And basically, simply for the fact that the 56 car was disbanding was kind of how, you know, they identified to talk to me. So that was kind of cool, because he went through a process of listening to some races that I did. So when they hire you, you know that, you know, they hired you and wanted you, you know what I mean? So they want you to do your job just the way you've been doing it. I think with him, just basically he knows my background. He knows I'm a racer. I know he's a racer. When he runs the dirt car some, like I go to the Chili Bowl every year, I'm always there. He knows I'm a racer. And so he knows that when I give him information, that it's absolutely 110% for a reason. And, you know, there's nothing, no useless information on our channel.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time that if you're looking for entertainment, you probably don't want to tune into the 17 car, because we're pretty much by the book, only what needs to be said. You know, there's no really joking around and cracking on other people and you know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, we're pretty much by the book. So he knows that when I give him something, it's you know, for his best interest and for the team's best interest. And then just from, you know, being a driver myself, I spot the way I wanted to be spotted for when I drove. And so
that's what I was saying earlier, Mike, was like, you know, it makes sense to have a driver in your ear, because he knows what, you know, what you're looking for too. So
yeah, you know, and when I'm spotting, I've pretty much physically put myself inside the car. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you're
yeah.
watching a car, my mind is inside that car. So, you know, it almost feels like, you know, you're driving it in a way, because you're putting yourself in there. You know what I mean? So, you know, depending on the situation, you know, I know if it's been a frustrating day, or, you know, things ain't really going well. You know, I know from my own past experiences of being those same type of situations that I really don't want a lot of information right now. So, you know, basically I just handle it, you know, the same way. And that's just basically, that's back to the years of experience. When you've been doing this game since you were 8 years old, and I'm 42 now, you've been part of and raced in a bunch of races and watched a bunch of races. And I've pretty much watched every Cup race there's ever been since 1979. You know, whether, you know, I was racing myself on a Saturday night and watched a Cup race on Sunday, or go on Pro Cup racing and have to tape them on old VCR back in the day. I've pretty much seen them all. So, you know, you just kind of build that notebook over the years and use it to the best of your ability when it comes time to race on Sundays now.
Yeah, so my rule, so I, my background is I was a crew chief on a Pro Trans Am team. And my rule was, like, so we'll use Watkins Glen as an easy example. I did not talk to them when they were going through the S's. I didn't talk to them when they were, you know, trying to go through turn one, whatever. They, you know, they got their hands full. They don't need me talking to them right now. I'll wait until that car's in a straight line. I'll tell them what I need to tell them, and I'll wait a couple seconds, unless it's crucial. But, you know, so that, so I get what you're saying. You got, you know, you got to understand what's going on inside that cockpit as well. So that's that makes a lot of sense.
Hell yeah. Hey, Mike, we're coming up to Michigan here in a couple weeks, which is our home track, and we'll be out there. And we're definitely going to step by and say hi to you if you, we see you walking around
absolutely.
Back there.
Yeah.
Anything about MIS you guys particularly like? Do you like the area? You, any hot spot that you guys hit or anything?
The Irish Hills are awesome. You know what I mean? And the hot spot being the next ice cream stand.
Yeah.
You know, you always eat a lot of ice cream, and it's just beautiful up there. I love going to Michigan. I love the racetrack too. And even though it's a big 2 mile, it's, you know, gives you the room you need to race and that kind of thing. It always puts on a good show. So I love going to Michigan.
I heard a funny saying once years ago, Sterling Marlin, actually it was for the August race, and they came to him and said, all right, you know, what do you need? You know, what do you want us to bring? And he said, well, it's Michigan. He says, I want the biggest engine we got in the house. He says, and I want lots of butter because it's sweet corn season in Michigan.
You know? Yeah, no doubt.
So, hey, Mike, thanks again for being on the show, man. Really appreciate it. And you are welcome anytime. Hopefully we'll catch up with you soon. And good luck this weekend.
Hey, I appreciate it. Hopefully we can have a good run with the 17 Fast and All car and keep building on the strong season that we've had. And I appreciate you having me on. And I'm going to jump out of the truck here, go down here and see who just won the little 600, and hopefully Ricky did well and built some momentum going to Charlotte this week.
We'll take it all.
Awesome,
hey, good,
man.
Good
thanks,
luck,
man.
Mike.
All right. Thank
take
you.
It easy.
Thanks.
Wow. Dude.
Learning a lot.
That was everything and more I hoped it would have been.
Yeah. You know, in a spotter, you know, for those of you not real familiar, and I know we've got a lot of newbie listeners, but the spotter stands on top of the stands, basically like the highest point they can, and they talk to the driver. They let them know if there's someone behind them, someone beside them, someone, you know, what's going on the entire time. They are talking, and they are locked onto that car for the entire race, 4 hours or whatever it is. And then you'll notice, like, some of the cars, you know, he mentioned, like, the ARCA cars, there's four white cars.
Yep.
Well, you'll notice that some of them have yellow numbers on the roof, or, you know, there'll be a piece of yellow tape or green something.
Yeah, just to help distinguish.
It's for the spotter.
Yeah.
So that the spotter can pick out his car and identify which one it is. So, tough job.
Yeah.
I don't want his job.
No, but that was so much fun. And something tells me we'll probably be able to get him back on the show.
Yeah, good guy.
Yes. Tony, truck race, Charlotte. It's All-Star weekend, baby.
Those truckers.
Kyle Busch show again. Tony, can you refresh my memory? I don't remember who won stage one.
Yeah, I'm astonished. It was Kyle.
Oh.
I was shocked. I didn't see it coming.
So someone else won stage two?
No.
And the win? Oh.
No.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
it was
okay.
It was the Kyle Busch show. Hey, I tweeted it out. I'll own it, man. I mean, it's like LeBron James going back to high school and being shocked that he scored 100 points. What is he doing? You know,
but here's the thing. You can't take anything away from him because he can go out on Sunday with the big boys and do it too, you know?
Not taking anything away from Kyle Busch at all. Mike just said it. Those guys don't make mistakes.
No.
They don't at all. But he's racing against guys that are 18 years old in many cases.
Yeah.
Not all of them.
Which is why I think it was for Ben Rhodes a couple weeks ago, you know, Kyle knew he had that one. And for him not to do a celebration and all that, I mean,
I think it was out of respect.
Absolutely.
He knew he was beat.
Absolutely. You know, so, I mean, sure, Ben Rhodes would probably like that trophy in the case and the win in the win column. But, I mean, you got a tip of the hat from a guaranteed Hall of Famer. You know, I mean, that's
a
pretty cool thing that not many drivers can go and
acknowledge.
Say.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Tony, I honestly, I was tweeting Friday. I went out with some friends, and I signed off around 1 a.m. Saturday morning that just said, I'm drunk. So, and I had good intentions Saturday to go back and watch the truck race, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't see
a lap. It was a good race. You know, I'm a truck guy, but I mean, it was just, you know, Kyle just leaves. You know, he just, it's like he's got another gear in his car and just leaves.
Truck, rather.
But, you know, he's just that much better and, you know, kind of kills some of the excitement. You know, great racing behind him.
Yeah.
Fantastic racing.
We've had that all season in all the series. The mid-pack racing's improved across all three series, in my opinion.
I agree.
Tony, there is one, when I was putting the show sheet together and looking at the results of the race and the standings, there is one silver lining to Kyle Busch and the Cup guys winning constantly in truck and Xfinity. And that is, these guys aren't getting points for that series. They're not getting playoff points for that series. So if you look at the truck standings right now, if we were to reseed the truck, Christopher Bell would have 7 playoff points. You'd have Kaz Grala with 5, Johnny Sauter with 3, and then everybody else has 0.
Yeah.
So you're not getting that spread of the playoff points like we're going to see in Cup. So when it comes time for Truck and Xfinity's playoffs, those guys are going to be racing, and that's going to be fun racing because everybody, I mean, in Cup, technically, everyone's still going to have a shot at it, but these guys are going to be racing hard for that, and it's going to be anybody's ballgame.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know. These guys are all fighting for every inch that they can get. These guys are all trying to make a name for themselves and keep those sponsors happy and everything. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, I 100%.
I really am.
Tony, Red Horse Racing.
Ooh.
Dude, since I had this on for later, but since we're talking about trucks, you might as well talk about it now, right?
That was a shocker, man. That hurt. I mean, they're 6th and 10th in points right
now. That's what blew my mind.
And
I mean, we're not talking about 25th and 30th, you know?
The door. So, I mean, so that's part of, you know, when I took a little bit of heat for it on Twitter, but, you know, this sponsorship stuff is big.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, I guess we can talk about it later on, but this, you know, these sponsors and taking care of your sponsors and getting them TV time and getting their picture in the newspaper and all of those things is a big deal. And when the Cup guys and, you know, the bigger guys come down and win the races and they steal those headlines and take those that TV time, you know, it hurts those smaller teams.
Yeah. I guess I'm just amazed that they're running 6th and 10th in the stand. They had a legit shot. Maybe they weren't going to win the truck championship, but
Timothy Peters, top five, no joke.
No, I know. That's what I mean. I'm baffled by it. I mean, I don't think anybody was expecting it, but it's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of teams that are going race to race and you know, hoping for the next, you know, phone call to be the big sponsor. But I mean, they're a good team. I mean, they're real. I would say one of the top tier, you know, truck teams.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Tony, you want to talk about the race on Saturday?
Let's do it.
All right. So the Open, Tony. The Open, the qualifier, if you will, for the All-Star race. Yeah. We had guys like Clint Bowyer, Chase Elliott, Austin Dillon, Suarez, Danica, Blaney, Paul Menard. Those are some of your bigger names that hadn't already pre-qualified for the All-Star race.
Yep.
And then you had guys like David Ragan, Michael McDowell, Reed Sorensen, Carl Long. Guys we wouldn't typically consider as all-stars running. It was a 50-lap, 3-stage shootout. Clint Bowyer won stage one, start to finish there.
He was fast. I mean, he was fast right off the trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, like a half a second faster than everybody else, I believe, in qualifying, something like that.
He definitely was the car of the field there. Ryan Blaney won stage two. Him and Chase Elliott, man, they put on a show.
Boy,
stage two
ever.
And three, man. Just stage two. But unbelievable racing in stage two and three of the Open.
They were fighting officially.
Stage two and three, in my opinion, was the best racing of the night.
Yep.
And then Daniel Suarez. Went stage three, which was nice for him, nice for Joe Gibbs Racing. But the Open was, like I said, that was the best racing of the night.
And to see the JGR guys, right? So Suarez and Kyle were running up towards the front. I think the one thing that the All-Star race does, this is a time for them to, you know, go and say, all right, we think this will work. we think this will be okay, but will it last? I mean, can it go at race distance? Can it go at race speed? Can this new designed whatever part, you know, this is actually a televised test session.
Well, it's a nice test
for a lot of these guys.
You know, all right. So real quick, Kyle Busch won. Kyle Larson won the first two stages. Jimmy Johnson won stage three, and then Kyle Busch picks up stage four. So Kyle Busch swept the weekend of the All-Star race. Tony, my biggest thing with the All-Star race, and I want your perspective on this, because I don't think we've talked about this outside of this, is I'm not a fan of the All-Star race in terms of All-Star racing in general. I'm not a fan of All-Star sports, whether we're talking the All-Star, the Pro Bowl, NBA All-Star weekend, whatever. I'm not a fan of it. And I'm not a fan of it maybe because I'm that much of a diehard fan of the sport itself. I don't like watch meaningless activity or competition. Yeah, all right, sure, the winner got $1 million. And sure, I was kind of hoping for Harvick to win, not for Harvick, but for the guy that was maybe going to win $1 million on his behalf if he won. But when I'm looking at this from a fan perspective, I'm a fan. I know my driver is only going to win so many times in his career. And I want him to win meaningful events. And the classic, the shootout before Daytona, the Clash, the All-Star race, any win that you get that's not points, that's a win that might be coming off you where you could have gotten it somewhere else. That's my opinion. Okay. You know, so for Kyle Busch to win, you know, obviously Kyle Busch is going to win going forward, but maybe it's one less win. And I would much rather watch a skills comp, something like that. You know, everyone's complaining, you know, bring back the pit crew challenge, all that kind of stuff. I would much rather watch these guys do something out of the ordinary to show off skill than to watch these guys run a meaningless race. And I'm saying meaningless in terms of from a points perspective. If there's no points involved, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, that win is just one less win that could be gotten somewhere else.
Sure.
I
get that. And truthfully, I like the skills too. I'll tell you the one that I'd like to see, and I've seen it in lots of other venues, is to bring in your engine builders and let them build engines. Okay.
Anything.
I mean, honestly, here's what they do. They have like an engine block sitting there, and all the parts are on a table.
Yeah.
Two guys, your two best engine builders, against another team of two best engine builders to, and they assemble this thing in about 20 minutes. And I mean, like, hit a button and it starts up.
Right.
I mean, like, that, it is really cool to watch them. I'd rather watch that, the pit crew guys, all of that stuff. I would rather actually see them go to more back to like an IROC series where they're all the cars are the same.
Yeah. Some just make it different. You know, that's, you know, and maybe next year when we run the road course in there, that'll perk my interest a little bit more. But yeah, no, totally. I think that would be awesome. Now, I don't know if Fox would want to broadcast some guys building an engine. I don't know how they would make that entertaining from a ratings perspective.
I don't know about ratings, but I'm going to tell you as a fan.
Yeah,
as a motorhead myself, it's cool. These guys are flying, and it's amazing how fast they can do this.
Yeah.
I'd like to know a couple of those guys.
Yeah,
send them by my house.
They might help.
Different story.
Tony, so Kyle Busch, he swept the weekend. He got JGR's first win of the season, and here we go, right? This kind of, I don't know if it proves my point or not, but I'm going to pretend it does. He gets his first win for JGR, not a points race. Yeah. Does that help him?
It does. Wins breed wins.
Right.
I say it all the time, but it does. And, you know, it could have been that time where they've been sitting on an idea, they've been developing something, and they're waiting until the All-Star race. We're going to put it on all three cars and run the hell out of it, and let's, fingers crossed, it's going to work. And, you know, by golly, it worked, right? I don't know that that's what they did. I'm guessing that's what they did.
Sure.
But to me, like I said, that's a big test session. So if they hit on something and their cars are running that strong, I'm saying we're going to see better things out of the JGR camp moving forward.
I like it, sir. I like it. Tony, just to recap, since it was the All-Star race, technically an off week, we got Kyle Larson still sitting in first place, Truex in second, Keselowski in third, Elliott in fourth, and Jamie McMurray wrap out the top five of the standings.
Wow.
Right? Like, that's crazy. So we are heading into the 600, longest NASCAR race of the season. Tony, we mentioned it last week briefly at the end of the show. A lot of people are in a tizzy over NASCAR adding a fourth stage to the 600. And, you know, you and I were talking about it last week of, hey, it's an extra restart. Who cares? You know, like, all right, let's do it. And not that this changes my opinion, but it's an interesting point that Jeff Gluck brought up on Sirius NASCAR Channel 90 over the weekend. Basically, what NASCAR did a week before the race was they decided they were going to make this race the most important race of the season by adding that extra stage because it gives extra playoff points and points that could be earned towards your standings points, which can get extra playoff points. So from that perspective, which I didn't think of that before, that's interesting to me is, okay, from a weighted value in terms of what you can earn as a driver to your standings, this race means more than the Daytona 500. Are you okay with that? Should that be what are your thoughts on that? From that,
I don't know. I don't understand why anybody's been about this. This doesn't hit my give a shit o meter. Okay. I mean, I really don't. I mean, just build a fast car and go to the front. I mean, you know what I mean? Win as many stages, win the race. You're not going to do anything different than what you were going to do anyways.
No. But I think his point is that the Coke 600 means more than the Daytona 500. You know, and I guess
from a points perspective,
right? Yeah, yeah. No, and that's all I'm saying. Not from a
prestige.
No. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Just a points. Is that still doesn't? We're not up to level two on the shit-o-meter.
Are we still talking about
okay.
this?
All right. Okay. I'm just writing down first hashtag #shit-o-meter on my note sheet because that is hitting Twitter.
Didn't get it.
Tony, this weekend is not only the Coke 600 at Charlotte, but it's also the Indy 500.
And the Monaco. And Formula One.
Tony, took some heat about Monaco.
I love that race.
Good.
I really do.
So I took some heat because I put a poll on Twitter just joking around asking, were people just going to watch the Indy 500, the Coke 600? Were they going to watch 1,100 miles or were they going to watch 1,103 miles because of overtime in NASCAR?
Right.
And I got some flack literally forgot about Monaco.
Yeah.
So normally I'm recovering from the hangover from Friday night of Memorial Day weekend that I forget about Monaco. So, yeah, so that's my bad. But, yeah, so we're going to have a lot of racing to talk about next
day.
Week.
I'm going to tell you right now, I'm getting everything ready. I'm getting, I'm going to have cooler. I'm not even going to put the beer in the refrigerator. I'm not going to be away from TV that long. I'm going to put a cooler
there
and I'm in.
Yes, sir. I love it.
I'm in for the day.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Want to plug some social media?
I do, sir. All right, everyone. Make sure you check out our website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. Like us on Facebook, The Lap Traffic Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, @LapTrafficPC. Make sure you subscribe, download on iTunes or Podbean, rate us, comment on us. We'd like to see that. Tony, we talked about it last week. I came up with a new contest for our next giveaway.
We do have one?
We do have one. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Tony, we're at around the 7,500 download mark on our show. When we hit 10,000 downloads, I have...
Which isn't going to be that long.
It's not that long. I'm guessing a couple weeks, maybe a month-ish, maybe less. Maybe we'll get it a little quicker with the contest. Tony, I have a 8x10 picture with the MIS logo that's signed by about 15 different drivers that I am going to give away to one lucky Twitter follower when we hit 10,000
downloads. Are you serious? I know exactly which one you're talking about, too.
Tony, this is signed by, I think it's got Jack Roush, Casey Kane, Martin Truex Jr., Greg Biffle, Matt Kenseth. Tony, this thing is stacked with autographs.
I know the picture you're talking about.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we are going to give that away when we hit 10,000
so
downloads.
No, he's taking it off the wall.
It's coming off the wall. That's how much I love doing this. That's how much you guys following and talking to us means.
Wow.
You can track our Podbean downloads if you actually go to Podbean and search the Lap Traffic Podcast. You can see it, so you can track it as we're going along. Tell your friends when we hit 10,000 downloads, this baby's going away to one lucky listener and follower on Twitter. I'll tweet a picture of that out. Yeah.
Hey, we've had some other updates to the website, too.
Hell, Tony, can I do this? You ready for this?
Let's do it.
Tony, I am so excited about this. I spent about 6 hours Saturday getting this all nice and neat
it's
on the website.
Us how long?
Oh, I know, right? So we officially, on the Lap Traffic Podcast have the official Lap Traffic Podcast store. On this, you can purchase Lap Traffic Podcast t-shirts, hoodies, tank tops. We didn't leave the women out. We got tank tops. We got the boyfriend t-shirt. We have cell phone cases. Tony, and we have a sippy cup available. You guys helped good, build
and,
that.
And it's a good one, too. Yes. They're not cheap, but
no,
it's a good one.
No. So here's the thing. We're still giving stuff away, obviously. Just mentioned our new thing. We got stickers and koozies that are on the way that we're going to send out and bring with us when we're out at MIS in Eldora. We know some people might like some t-shirts. You know, we're not pocketing a ton of money from this, and everything that we get, you know, we've got the distributor and the website hoster getting their share.
Not pocketing a ton. I haven't seen a dollar.
Everything that we get is going to go back into the podcast in terms of being able to purchase more stuff to be able to give away, upgrading equipment.
Go to more races, do
absolutely,
some live broadcasts.
Absolutely. So
everything, we, honestly... You know,
we're
pouring it right into the final product here, and
it's just to improve the show and to reduce our out of pocket a little bit. Absolutely, it's really cool. I mean, there's six different t-shirt options and 30 different color options that you can choose from that. It's all secure through PayPal and through Shopify and all that kind of stuff. But that's live. On our website, thelaptrafficpodcast.com. And we're not going to plug it. It's out there. If you guys want to help support the show, if you want a cool t-shirt with our new logo or whatever, we appreciate it. We love you guys. And we just wanted to make that an option and put it out there for you. So like it's there.
Shout-outs?
Yes, sir. Some shout-outs. Bruce Corey from Pine Hills, New Jersey. Tony, you need... I'm going to send you this guy's profile picture.
I saw it.
Oh, you did see it?
I saw it.
Dude, this guy's got an iRacing setup that blew... It's like walking into Dave & Buster's and sitting in an arcade machine.
It's better than what's at Dave & Buster's. Right? This is like a professional team... You know, test rig kind of thing. I mean, he's got monitors all the way around. The seat moves. It's got shock absorbers in it. And
nuts. You know, I want to come over to this guy's house one day and play.
I did some iRacing for a while, man. This guy takes it way more serious than I did, man. He's way into it. That's really
it's
cool.
Awesome, dude.
Can we
come play?
Well, number one, can we come play? Can we get a picture of that we can put up?
Yeah, absolutely. If he doesn't mind, I'll
let's ask him first because it's cool.
It's really cool. Some new Twitter followers: Anita Garrison at LovingNASCAR88 from Georgia, big Junior fan. Wanda Bread at Wanda Bread hails from Victory Lane, and obviously with that name is a big Joey Logano fan. Jeff Wilson at White Plate 14, big Kyle Larson and Tony Stewart fan, and a big dirt track fan. And I think this guy's from Ohio, so maybe he'll be at Ohio or at Eldora and can come to our tweet up there.
That'd be cool.
Absolutely. So like I said, stickers, koozies on the way. Send us some pictures. Tony, we mentioned it last week on the show, and I actually got a hold of the guy on Facebook. If anybody's interested in a miniature version of a track-specific victory lane or start-finish line, hit up Craig Dalton on Diecast. Just search NASCAR Diecast groups, and that group will pop right up. Hit him up. This guy does a fantastic job. I actually ordered one of MIS that Lindsay knows about. There may be a second one that she doesn't know about. We're going to find out if she really listens to this show like she says she does, because I just spilled the beans there. We'll see.
I didn't know anything about it, Maria. I swear to God, I didn't know anything. But if anybody wants to send us anything, you know, you want to send us some pictures or any of your stuff, love to have it here in the Man Cave. You can send it to us at the Lap Traffic Podcast, Post Office Box 725275 in Berkeley, Michigan, 48072.
And, Tony, anybody that has sent us anything or that does send us anything, they're definitely going to get some koozies and some stickers back.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Depending on what they send us.
Well, of course, right, obviously.
Don't send me your cable bill.
Just to recap and remind everybody, get your picks in for Charlotte. We're back to fantasy racing. And now, Tony, that we've got our store and we've got some gear, we can finally start putting together what the prizes are going to be for everybody now that we've got that.
Yeah.
So we'll get that out in the next week or two.
Together.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just to remind everybody, like I said, get your picks in for fantasy. Tony's got a 10-point lead over Cody, who's got a 10-point lead over a three-way tie for third. And the professor's coming. Him and my new sippy cup, we're all coming. Right. Tony, you ready for the lucky dogs?
I am ready for the lucky dog.
Tony, who's your lucky dog of the All-Star weekend?
Lucky dog, I'm going to go with Kyle Busch. I mean, he did it. You know, you can't deny it, right? I mean, he's good. It's just you can't take anything away from the guy, and he's fast. He had a great weekend, so that's who I'm giving it to. What about
awesome.
You?
I am giving it to Trevor Bayne for making the save of possibly the season,
right?
Dude. Like, he fishtailed from left to right, and
he was tank slapping all the way down.
That was a great save. That was some hell of hand. I don't even know how to phrase that. Some handling to be able to. Yeah. Keep that car from not going in the dirt there.
Yeah.
Tony, who are you putting a lap down?
Goodyear. Goodyear. Boo. Boo hiss.
Nice.
That sucked.
Nice. Tony, for the third week out of four, I'm putting NASCAR lap down for the schedule, but I'm going to get into that here in a minute. Tony, you want to do some listener picks?
They just announced
that. Yes. I changed my pick from who I was initially putting a lap down.
All right.
Mick at GoDucks42, lucky dog is stage three of the Open. Mick, couldn't agree with you more. And he's putting the all-star race in general a lap down. Tony, our friends over at PETM, they are putting a NASCAR a lap down for a less than thrilling finish of the all-star race. So, yeah, if you didn't watch the all-star race, you are the lucky dog. Lori is giving the lucky dog to qualifying and putting the actual race a lap down. Stacy is putting giving her lucky dog to the qualifying, and a lap down goes to the rules for the all-star race
because they seem to just
call in audibles left and right there. Troy, lucky dog is also going to Trevor Bayne for not becoming Danica's next victim. And he's putting the option tire a lap down. Tony, I think you can agree with that one there, right?
I agree entirely. Troy, you and I, once again, brother.
David Waco, new listener. Lucky dog is going to Kyle Busch because, hey, he won $1 million. And a lap down is he's putting DraftKings a lap down for not having an all-star weekend there. And I responded back to him and said, hey, I'm okay with that because I'm on one hell of a losing streak on DraftKings. So there is that. So make sure you look out for our tweets when we're asking for the lucky dogs and who you'd put a lap down. We kind of like doing that. So that's kind of fun there. Tony, you ready to go to work?
Ready to go to work.
Let's do it. It's time for another segment of the Crew Chief Corner with the Lap Traffic's very own Crew Chief Tony Smith. All right, welcome to the 11th edition of the Crew Chief Corner. Tony, I feel so bad. Last week was the 10th episode. I completely forgot to make a big deal of that. The cake, the ice cream, the balloons, it all went to waste. I feel horrible about that.
And you said I was special.
I know, I lied. What can I say? Tony, today's question comes to us from me because I have one and it kind of goes along with some other people were saying. Tony, why did the tire option really not seem to provide that much of a impact?
Honestly, it was just a huge swing and a miss on Goodyear's part. You got to have a much softer compound, I think is what they just figured out real quickly, painfully, that if you're going to make a half a second difference and send them to the back, you know, it's going to have to be really, really, really soft and really fast. But now they've also treated the track, and they're treating it again right now. So I don't know that probably gave the older tires, more grip.
Sure.
But, you know, I think IndyCar's got it figured out. Their soft tires really make a big difference. And this is Goodyear's first swing at it. And it was
trial and error.
Big swing and a miss.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the concept.
Sure. Well, like we were talking before the show, you know, maybe this tire would have had more of an impact at Bristol, Martinsville,
it may have,
you know,
yeah.
But yeah, they definitely needed
where you're going to have your tight corners and launching off the corners where Charlotte, you're standing on the gas 95% of the time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the tires obviously count, but maybe not as much as they would at Richmond.
Sure. Tony, over the last couple of days, man. Did you hear about the Indy? We talked about a little bit with Mike here, with Dixon and all. Good Lord.
Unbelievable. A couple of Indy 500 champions just going to get a burrito after qualifying on the pole for the Indy 500 and get robbed by a couple of teenagers at gunpoint. Unbelievable.
It's between that and the thing in England last night, dude. This world needs
what
to
is going on?
Seriously. Can we all just hug?
Chill pill for real.
Right?
Yeah, crazy,
like,
man.
Internet high five to people, like, you know, come on.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Can we all get along?
Yeah. Tony, Ford, man. Big news here in the Auto City.
Yeah, right down the street. 20 minutes from here, not even probably. Ford shook up a new CEO. Mark Fields is out, and Bill Hackett's in from Steelcase. They had to make a change. I mean, their stock, they were the only manufacturer, I don't know if most people know this, but they were the only manufacturer to go, you know, a few years back that did not take a bailout. You know, GM and Chrysler did. Ford was cool. They toughed it out. Truthfully, the Ford family still owns most of the shares of stock, and they put up as collateral, you know, their own shares of stock. So, I mean, this family cares. It's still the very much the Ford family that owns that. And, you know, they just had to do something to get things moving a little bit. And they feel that this would be the right way to go. Hope they do. Always root for the hometown guys. But that was big news.
It's always, I'm curious to know, like, you know, 2, 4, and 7 blew this up, right? Like, big spectacle
local
in Metro Detroit.
News, guys.
You know, I'm curious, you know, did this even cross TV airways, you know, if you're not following NASCAR, you know, sports and, you know, auto racing probably heard about this, but if you're Joe Blow basketball fan, like, did this even cross and hear your airwaves or your Twitter handle? Like, you know, I wonder across the country, like, did it impact as much as we felt and feel it here?
That's interesting. I mean, it's big here, of course. You know, that's local news and it's big stuff. But, you know, I think really what it came down to is a shareholder of Ford. I mean, it's like $10, $11 for a share of stock. I mean, I spend that much on lunch,
right?
You know, and they got to move it, and they just haven't been able to move that needle. Now, I'll give you an idea. So Ford Motor Company is $11. I don't know, it was $11.05 yesterday, something like that. And I want to say, like, Buffalo Wild Wings was like $160
right
a share. Okay, so
do you know what GM was? Don't mean to put you on the spot.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't have GM stock. I do have those two. You know, when Ford Motor Company is worth, you know, fractions of
a Taco Bell lunch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I mean, fractions of chicken wing stock.
Right.
You know, I mean, you got to do something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
Tony, we talked about the truck race earlier and Red Horse Racing and sponsorship issues and all that kind of stuff. You've got a little bit better background with that than I do, obviously. Lay it down for us here, man.
Man, the sponsorship thing, and I got good and bad feedback on Twitter, and that's okay. I appreciate everybody's opinion, but I'm gonna lay it down for you. This is exactly how it works, and this is why it bothers me so much when the Kyle Busches of the world go down into the Truck Series and Xfinity Series. So here's how it works, guys. So when you're a team and you get a sponsor, you're going to say, all right, we usually run top five at this track. You know, we have a good shot of winning. We've made these changes, and the money that you're giving us is going to allow us to do this, and you're going to get this amount of TV time and, you know, all of those things. Well, and then a couple of cup guys come down, and you don't get any TV time, okay? And how they measure that, every frame, every second that you're on the TV, they count that Monday morning, okay? Actually, it's actually right after the race. The marketing department will break it down, and they'll say, look, you had 1 minute and 37 seconds of TV time, airtime, that equates to this much dollars in marketing. Okay, if you were going to get an ad for a minute and 37 seconds, it would cost you this much money, and we're only charging you this much money. Okay, that's how it works, all right? In-car cameras, right? You want to do more marketing? They don't just randomly give you in-car cameras and draw a name out of a hat. You buy those, okay? And those are like $50,000 to put inside your car, okay? And by the way, if you wreck, you total it, you bought it, okay? The team's got to pay for that.
No refund.
No, no. You break it, you buy it,
right?
And that's why when you're in, so you see the in-car cameras, there's 72 stickers inside there, because every time they go to that, they want you to see that. And that's, there's a value to that. So you want to say, all right, they're gonna go to that clip, they're gonna show in-car camera this many times during the race, and that equates to this many dollars of airtime, marketing dollars,
yeah,
for the sponsor. And when Kyle Busch runs away and he's got an hour and 40 minutes of, you know, airtime, and Timothy Peters gets 42 seconds, you know, that hurts.
Sure.
I don't care. I mean, is it going to fix it? If the Cup guys don't, is it going to cure everything? Of course it's not. But it matters.
Sure.
Okay, and that's what pisses me off about it.
That's what grinds Tony's gears. Yeah,
it does, man. It does.
Someone actually said we should do a Grind Our Gears segment.
Oh, that's a good one.
I like it. I'm not opposed. Yep. We could work something in there.
Yep.
I'd like to play the Family Guy clip, but I'm sure that's against some regulation or something.
Trademark rule in there somewhere. But so anyway, no, I mean, it matters though. And you know, that's what the dollars for the racing teams, they don't just give them to them randomly. They want a return on that.
Yeah.
But if you're not getting on TV, you're not getting them any return.
I think that was part of Nature's Bakery issue. They weren't, didn't feel they were getting the return of their investment. But, you know, in something like this, it's hard to quantify that. You know, you can say X amount of TV time is worth X amount of dollars, you know, but it's hard as a company, I would think, to be able to say, okay, well, I spent $25 million on a sponsorship, and I saw profit go up by this. So it's hard to support that. That's why
it's
you
not,
may be.
It's not a profit thing. It's a, here's what they do is they, all right, so we can spend $20 million and we're going to get, okay, if we take that $20 million and we put it in newspapers, magazines, TV, you know, whatever, serious radio ads, whatever it is, how much is that going to cost us and how many people are going to see it versus if we have that, if Jimmy Johnson's in Winner's Circle and he's doing donuts and he's in the, won the whatever race and, you know, that's, they equate that all together and where do they get the most, you know,
sure,
who sees it the most for that amount of money? That's what it comes down to. It's not a profit and loss thing.
I got you.
They've got a marketing budget and that's where they're putting their eggs in that basket. So that's why the pressure's on to perform. And when, you know, the guys that are running second and third don't get any TV time, you know,
it hurts. Yeah,
so.
Got it. Well, that's Crew Chief Corner for this week, guys.
It is.
That was big.
I know something's been grinding your gears.
Oh, Tony, the professor is setting to give a lecture here. So everyone sit down, shut up, get out your number two pencils and double space. Tony, so the schedule literally grinded my gears about 3 hours ago.
That could be ground.
Grounded, whatever. Anyways. It's pissed me off is what it did.
There you go.
So schedule change came out for 2018 and everyone making a big deal about it. And Tony, I this is what I did. I printed off this year's schedule and I printed off the schedule for next year. Okay. And I'm sitting there. Oh. First race same, second race same, third race same, fourth race same. They're starting the season a week early, so by default everything shifted up a week. But Tony, the first 10 races are the same, no changes. Daytona, Atlanta, Vegas, Phoenix, Auto Club, Martinsville, Texas, Bristol, Richmond, Talladega, all the same. Already I'm pissed off. I'm like,
what did you want them to do?
They said they were shaking this up. All right, now they did. All right, a little. The 11th race, Dover. All right, they moved that up a month. Okay, fine. All right. Kansas, then we go to the All-Star race, then Charlotte. Pocono moved up a couple weeks. Okay, a week or two difference in terms of when you're running the race, that's not a move for me. Michigan, all right, it's not running Father's Day weekend. It's running June 10th. Okay, all right, I'm supposed to be excited about that. Like, we've got this new rules package. We've had the same cookie cutter schedule for years, and I was expecting a shakeup. These cars, these teams, it's not like they're staying and cutting distance and time by moving from one track to the other where logistics is an issue. These guys are all coming back to the shop each week, especially in the Cup. You know, like, I get it from the truck's perspective. You know, they miss the West Coast swing. The Cup truck teams, from a budgeting standpoint, fine. I don't have a problem with that. But you mean to tell me those Cup guys, they moved. And you want to keep the West Coast swing, fine. But to have the same 10 to start off the race. And then, all right, one big change. Chicago is no longer starting the playoffs. Instead of racing Chicago in September, they moved that to July 1st. So in my opinion, the July 1st race is the first real big change of the 2018 season. So I got to wait till July before I really see a change in the season. I'm sorry, that doesn't do anything for me. Then we got Daytona at its, you know, the 4th of July time. Great. Pocono. All right, we're making a change. Last few years, everyone bitches about Pocono. Why does Pocono run both of its races 5 weeks apart? Tony, guess what? 5 weeks apart in 2018. Why? Why? Are you kidding me? Watkins Glen, Michigan, Bristol, all those, same race weekend. Now, we get to the playoffs, all right? The first three races of the playoffs changed. We're running Indy to start the playoffs. Okay, cool. We got a new race to start the playoffs. But it's Indy. You mean to tell me running Indy September 9th is going to be that much more of an impactful race than what we get when we have July? I'm going to be honest with you. I'm expecting a boring race to start off the playoffs. I don't think, unless they make some kind of rules package change, sure, we're going to have guys competing, but I think the racing is going to be pretty similar to what we've had.
But I'm wondering, though, I mean, with the aero package,
yeah,
it could change with Brickyard this
year. It could. So I'm hoping. I want it to be an exciting first race of the playoffs. I'm hoping. And then after Indy, we go to Las Vegas, which gets its first playoff race and second race of the season. And then Richmond, instead of being the last race for the cutoff, is now the third race of the playoffs. Tony, that's it. Everything else, the same. So in a 36-race season, we've got five changes, 13% of the race. I'm sorry, that just doesn't do it for me. That is not a shakeup. It's a change. There are some changes. Sure, there are changes.
Do you want me to tell you why?
Please, enlighten me.
Because a lot of this is weather dictated. Okay, you can't run Las Vegas in July.
Fair.
You can't run, you know, Michigan in October.
No, but you could run it in May and you could run it May and September.
Only so many things weather-wise that you can do with the schedule.
Fine. Okay.
Fair.
Fair, but I still think they could have changed and made a little bit bigger of an impact than just five races.
I got to check my gauge to see if it hit my give a shit. Nope, didn't hit my give a shit a meter. It's still right there where it was.
Tony, so. it peaked mine. I revved.
I know,
all right, I'm hitting red.
I know.
I guess because of the build. They gave me a build, and they did not deliver on a build, right, as far as I'm concerned. All so right, that's what grinds the professor's clear right gears. Class dismissed.
All right, there we go. Enough of that, huh? Tony, something you're better at.
Thank you. Tony, it's time for some odds, baby.
Let's do the odds.
Let's do some odds. Tony, I am setting Kyle Busch as the odds-on favorite at plus 600. I'm putting Jimmy Johnson at plus 750. Putting Kyle Larson at plus 800. Kevin Harvick at plus 1,000. I'm putting Martin Truex Jr. at plus 1,000, too. I'm sure a lot of people will probably have him around the 750 to 800 range. I just don't think he's going to do it. Brad Keselowski, I'm putting at plus 1,100. And Jamie McMurray, I'm putting on here. He's top five standings. He's won this race before. Don't know that he's at a winning level yet, but he's getting there. I'm putting him at plus 1,500. What do you think about that there, sir?
I think that looks sounds pretty good.
Pretty good?
Yeah. You going to make your pick, your fantasy pick?
Yes, I am, sir. And I am going to take Kyle Larson.
Kyle Larson.
Who you got, sir?
Number 42. I am going to go with the Lowe Chevrolet, number 48.
Like it. Thought okay about that. Jimmy that crossed Johnson my mind. That crossed my mind.
That's who I'm picking.
Tony, real quick, before we wrap up here, Regan Smith was named as the replacement driver for the 43 car for the All-Star race. They said that was just for that race. They hadn't made any decisions yet. I haven't heard anything. I was surprised by that name. You and I were kind of along the lines of Casey Mears there.
Well, Regan's been in the series for a while, and he's certainly a well-respected driver. He's
sure
fast.
Yeah.
I didn't see the affiliation.
Yeah,
there was
yeah,
no
yeah,
tie
totally,
there.
Totally.
That's what caught me off guard. Regan Smith, perfectly capable guy.
Absolutely.
So we'll see what happens. Hopefully he holds on. Stay tuned there.
Tony, I felt so bad. Last week, literally, we were talking about Yunker Motorsports and how they had the car ready to go to Bristol. They were ready to go. And literally, Tony, we were doing the show. They were running some practice laps.
Last week.
While we were plugging them to run this past Saturday at Bristol. And they blew an engine during the practice.
I can feel I appreciate their pain entirely.
I know.
So here's what... I've dropped a couple hints, but we were late recording last week because as Yunker was unloading their car and getting ready to, to run that last Tuesday night. I was late to getting the show because I have a Dodge Viper, and I grenaded the motor on my Viper. So, and then my good buddy, Mr. Yunker, did grenaded his motor, you know, within an hour of that. So, bad night all the way around. So,
They are, just as you are, they are working on fixing that. And, you know, they don't want to half-ass it. They don't want to, you know, they want to make sure it's right for the remainder of the season. Hopefully, they'll have it ready for Auto City.
No, it's something that you got to go in whole-assed.
Yeah.
You can't half-ass that one. But, yeah, same way. My engine's on its way out as well. So.
Yes. So we know those guys will rebound, and they'll be back out there.
Yeah, they'll be ready. Yes. I'm ready. I'm anxious to see
that
car, too.
I can't wait. Yes. Tony, we got a guest next week.
I know. This is going to be a riot, too.
Tony.
You know what? To me, this is like kind of like our all-star weekend.
Absolutely.
Where we can just have fun.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
Next week, the PETM podcast is invading the Lap Traffic podcast. Sherwin.
Well, half of them.
Half of them. Sherwin is going to come on the show. He's probably going to stay on the whole show with us,
That's
imagine.
Cool.
We are probably going to throw most of the show sheet out the window. I imagine we'll be talking about all three races over the weekend and some. Maybe some funny stories. He can tell us what got them started in their podcast, the whole nine yards.
Well,
next week's going to be fun.
It should be really fun because I think – so here's what I think is cool about – I love those guys.
Yes.
And I love their show and I love what they do. But they do it so differently than what we do.
Yes.
So I think it'll be cool. I mean, they're doing it live. They're doing it, you know, with a beer in their hand. They're just – you know, they're – and I know they prepare for the show.
Oh, absolutely.
But – guys, we'll have to tweet this. I'll have to do this one day. I've got 7 pages of typed notes here from the professor in our show preparation. Okay, this is mega hours of detail and stuff, and we only talk about some of the stuff that's on here, and we fill an hour easily every week.
We're at an hour 20 right now.
Yeah, so this is like Uber preparation that we do.
Well, that I do, because Tony doesn't need everything that I put out. More, it's for me, just because I'm anal retentive.
Yeah, but so I think it'll be cool.
Yeah, no, I can't wait. Tony, so what do we got going on next week?
We're
going to
break down a long weekend of racing.
Yes.
I'm going to hang out with the PETM guys with Sherwin. And we're going to talk, obviously, Charlotte and Indy and fantasy and whatever else we can get our hands on. Big thanks to Mike Herman Jr. for coming on. And,
Tony, real quick, again, check out our website. Get a Lap Traffic t-shirt, sippy cup. It's out there. It's ready for you.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think.
And make sure you tune in every week. Otherwise, you will be a lap down. Thanks for joining us.
See ya!